Welcome to the podcast of Grace Covenant Church, where we are transformed by God's grace, connected through relationships, and committed to service.
Okay. Lucky. What are you going to do with your share of the money? A car. A big, shiny, silver car. I'll drive all over Hollywood. Show Flugelman a thing or two. What about you?
New York, maybe Paris. A lot of champagne, parties. Be a big shot for a while. How about you, Ned?
I'm going to start a foundation to help homeless children.
That occurred to me to do that at one point, too.
Well, I meant that I would do that first, and then I would get a big shiny car.
Or after I didn't come back.
Right, I remember now, the homeless children. I was going to spend money on them. I think if you have to be reminded of the homeless children when you have excessive wealth like these three gentlemen apparently are coming into, there might be something wrong that you'd have to be reminded. Oh, right, other people. Okay. You know, when Jesus, I don't know if you've noticed, but when Jesus talks and teaches, and he's the greatest teacher ever, right? But when he teaches, he rarely, it's hard to find where Jesus actually has a list of how-tos. He doesn't teach how-to, like sermons. He doesn't have a 69 easy ways to have a perfect marriage, 14 principles of parenting teenagers, right? You can't find 7 irreducible minimal concepts to spiritual vitality, right? 3 essentials of doing things right. You don't see him doing that. And the reason is because Jesus teaches at a deeper level. He teaches below the surface values and issues. And the reason is because he has realized that all in, you know, when we talk about being all in, it's not so much what you do, but it's how you view life. If your soul, if your value system, if your worldview is all in, then a lot of times the rest will take care of itself. Like, it's a little bit like this Far Side cartoon. This is Bob's gallery here. And Bob has a crick in his neck. And so his head hangs sideways. But according to Bob, every one of those paintings is hung perfectly horizontal. Right? It makes perfect sense to Bob. And that's the way he sees things. And Jesus doesn't come to him and say, well, Bob, here's 6 ways to hang a painting accurately. Here's a level. Here's a laser level. And when you do that, then you can know it's true. No, Jesus comes along and says, Bob, if I can fix your perspective on everything, you can hang those paintings all by yourself. You get that part right, you'll get the details. And so Jesus spends most of his teaching time focusing on below surface issues, the things that motivate us, because we all see about the same things in life, but how we value it and why is a worldview. We all see the same things, but what we prioritize and why is a paradigm. Okay, are the things that we enjoy in life and why are part of seeing things from an entire kind of below surface perspective. And so when you look at the teachings of Jesus, he's not trying to change so much what you do. That will be an effect, not a cause most of the time. He's trying to change your whole system of perceiving reality. And he wants us to perceive it as though we are eternal beings because we are living in a very temporal state. And he wants us to be thinking ahead, not right now. Now, with that in mind, that's a perfect kind of example of what we should be expecting to see when we read in Luke chapter 12. If you'll turn to Luke chapter 12 with me, I just wanted you to know what to be looking for. Jesus is going to be talking about more than the superficial things. Okay, in chapter 12, verse 1, just to get an idea of what's happening here, Matthew, Mark, Luke, third book in the New Testament in the biographies of Jesus. Meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on to one another, Jesus began to speak first to his disciples, saying, Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees. What I mean by that, Jesus is saying, is hypocrisy. So if you can imagine, you know, a South by Southwest conference or ACL or something, just thousands of people working their way into some sort of natural amphitheater to be able to hear Jesus speak. Okay, and he's choosing the topic, and he's talking to his 12 especially, and he says, listen, if you want to have a ministry, if you want to be consistent with what's happening in the kingdom of God, we need to talk about hypocrisy. Now, as Jesus continues to teach, you can see, if you can envision this, you can see someone working their way through the crowd that now has settled down because Jesus is speaking and he's working as you write. Yeah, excuse me, I really don't care, but I'm coming through here because I have something to share and talk to Jesus about. He's the greatest teacher around. I heard the man can walk on water. Maybe someday he'll even save us from our sins. But I want to talk to him about this. And in verse 13, here's the question. Someone from the crowd said, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Somewhere in this man's recent past, he said, I'm telling Jesus. And he did. Personally, I can't fault the man for working his way to the front of the crowd to just be in earshot of Jesus. But when Jesus hears this, he drops his outline of what he was going to teach on, and this man comes and says, can you make my brother share the inheritance with me? And Jesus says in verse 15, I'm not the judge of this situation, but in verse 15 he says, watch out, be on guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions. Look how startling this warning is. He says, watch out. I mean, doesn't that sound like he's like in a car and somebody's about to back into him? Watch out, watch out, watch out. Be on your guard for all kinds of greed. He hears this question that this man is in an argument with his brother about their dead father's wealth. And he says, okay, you'd better be careful. Watch out. Be on guard for all kinds of greed. Jesus never says this about anything else. Not this dramatic form. He doesn't talk about sexual indiscretions this way. It doesn't say, watch out, be on guard for all sorts of sexual, you know, temptations. Doesn't say that. And I think he does in this context of greed is because most people, when they're involved in other sins, they know it. There's no doubt about it. But in our auditorium right now, I'll bet most people right now listening to me are thinking, this sermon's for someone else. I mean, I'm not greedy. That's the whole point. Greed is so subtle. It is like this mildly sloping sidewalk, you know, covered in ice. And you don't have to do anything. You just kind of slide down, and it's so unnoticeable. And so we don't ever think we're greedy, and that's why he's saying, watch out, you know. Be on your guard for every type of greed. Tim Keller, he's a pastor in New York City, he says, look, all these other sins, you know when you do them. When someone's in an adulterous affair, they don't suddenly go, wait a minute, you're not my wife, right? Wait, I'm committing adultery. So it's this greed that kind of sneaks up, but it doesn't just say watch out. He says, be on your guard for all sorts or all kinds of greed. And that points to, I think, what he's talking to about a deeper level of understanding of greed. Because that's what happens with greed. It points us to deeper things. It points us to things that are below the surface. Richard Keys wrote a fabulous book called No God But God. He talks about different types of idols. And he uses an illustration almost like an iceberg, okay, where greed would be on the top. And it is a means of pointing to deeper idols. And that's why Jesus is saying all kinds of idols, because it's pointing to deeper things that we're actually attaching ourselves to, right? So like power, for example, we might use money to get power because we want influence in other people's lives or influence in the world. And so what do you do if you want to influence people? Well, you throw money at it, don't you? And so Jesus is saying, you know, watch out, be careful, Guard yourself from all sorts of greed because you might be pursuing money so that you can have influence and power. And Jesus is saying, why don't we look at this differently, right? Instead of like this, and money can get me that, why don't you kind of look at it like this with your head straight up and say, what if I was the source of your power? What if you started to realize that the spirit of the resurrection was within you and you wouldn't be so insecure about being powerless? That's what Jesus is trying to add to this equation. Some people do it for approval, and they want the greed is the means of getting approval, because if you want people to like you, right? Yeah, and you're looking at life with your head in the crick, just throw money at it. If you're wealthy, you'll be popular. And Jesus says, well, let's take a look at this for just a second. Instead of throwing money at it, what if you were absolutely convinced that I would never leave you? And what if you sincerely believed the words that I spoke that essentially said there is no way I could love you more? And I expressed that love in my death and resurrection, and now you're mine. Then you wouldn't worry about approval, would you? Right. Another way, a thing that we idle is comfort. We want to be either psychologically our souls at peace or at rest, or our bodies in, you know, extravagantly cared for. And so what's a means of doing that, right? Greed. You just throw money at it. If you look at life like this, all the paintings look like they're hung just right. And so you indulge in every expectation that you could have. And the more money you have, the greater the places you can go. And Jesus says, what if I straightened your head and you saw things the way they truly are, spiritually speaking? I can give you this. I promise in my words that even when you're extremely uncomfortable, even in torment and persecuted, you would receive joy and peace that is beyond any expectation you could have. See, Jesus said, don't throw money at it, throw me at this. And finally, probably the biggest one, the deepest one, is control. Is people aren't worshiping greed, and they don't think they're very greedy because they're really worshiping control. They want to make sure their future is safe. They want to make sure their lives are safe. They want to make sure their kids are safe. And so from this point of view, if you have enough wealth, it'll cover everything. And Jesus says, look, what if I straightened you out and you saw things the way they were true? What if I were the source of control? What if you saw me for my power and my sovereignty, my ability to work in the world that I'm still involved in? Then you'd be out of control, but you'd know who was in control. So that's why Jesus says, look, you know, watch out, watch out. Make sure that, you know, you're on guard against every kind of greed. Because these types of greed, they show up differently, and sometimes even in marriages. I mean, think about a husband. This is a case in a book that I read. A husband who's very much into control, and so he's extremely thrifty, saves every dime, and invests it safely into a future retirement. Because what he fears is the future. And how do you cure that fear for the future? Simply, well, especially if you're looking at it like this way, is you're modest in everything that you do, and you put it away. Meanwhile, you know, the what's interesting is the idea of being, you know, watching out and being on your guard for all types of greed. Here's the question I'd ask this person: how much retirement do you really need? What's the number? Let's just say you can come up with a number. Okay. Then after you hit that number, what happens? You give everything else away? What about the children, right? What about the homeless children? No, what happens with people that aren't watching out for every kind of greed, whatever that number is, if they even come near it, they just expand the number. Well, you know, you never can be too sure. You don't know what's going to happen. So we'll just keep accumulating. There's no target. There's just this growing need. What about the children? Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Well, I have to be reminded to be generous. Meanwhile, the wife in this story, her thing was approval. And she liked spending money a lot on herself. And so it was trying to stay young through various means of doing that and staying fashionable every way she can. And staying fashionable means the right kind of cars in the right neighborhoods and that sort of thing. So here's the thing. When is the arrival date there? right? It was pretty easy for the husband and even the counselor to diagnose that you're not trusting God for that sort of thing. And so there's always a prettier dress or a newer car, or, you know, when you get that neighborhood and then you get the friends in that neighborhood, there's always a better neighborhood, right? You can always move up and then move up in your approval people. So in the, you see, because they weren't looking out for all sorts of greed, they were both consumed by it. But here's what happens a lot of times. Is people that are in it for control, especially the future, they think not just that they're right, they think that they're righteous because they're saving and not just spending on themselves. And in this little conversation with this counselor and the husband that was into control and saving for the future and the wife that was into, you know, bling and that sort of thing, she was hearing from him how selfish she was. And then finally the counselor, who understood and read this book about no God but God, he just says, wait a minute, husband. You're spending all your money on you, the future you. So you're not trusting God. You're not doing anything different from her. You're just spending it all on you. I have to remind you, what about the children? And so fortunately, the man was able to respond and basically, oh, you got me. You're right. I'm spending it all on me. She's spending it all on her. And neither one of us are thinking about the future where we're going to see God and give an answer to the way we live. And so from that point on, the counselor started taking this, right, the subsurface level and said, okay, what if God were in control and you trusted him more? What if God were approving of you and you didn't care about other people's opinion? Then you could have a legitimate budget and you could give generously and the homeless children would be on your mind. Do you see? And that's why Jesus teaches this way. That's why Jesus talks about the deeper things. That's why Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard for all types of greed. Because here it is in a nutshell. A man's life does not consist on the abundance of his possessions. You guys are just looking at life like this, maybe even upside down. We've got to straighten your view on what is real. And Jesus helps this man understand what's real and what's true by telling him a little story. It picks it up in verse 16. Let me show it. Let's read it together. And he told a parable. This is Jesus now. And he said, the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He had a banner year, basically. So the man thinks to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. It's all about him, right? Oh, yeah, we're the homeless children. Oh, yeah, yeah, right. I was going to do that. Verse 18. And then I said to myself, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. There I will store all of my grain and all of my goods. And then I will say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be married. Look what he says. What gods, by the way, what subsurface gods is he serving? Then I will say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Which ones? Control? Then I will say to myself, now I'm done. I'll have plenty of money for the future. And then the other one, right, is comfort. And then I'll say to myself, relax. Be at ease psychologically and physically. Eat, drink, and be merry. But the story continues. Verse 20. And God said to him, you fool. God says, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? And this, there's the punchline, verse 21. This is how it will be for everyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich towards God. This is what happens to every single person who does not straighten their perspective on life and just do everything for themselves, who constantly have to be reminded, oh, right, the homeless children, there are needs outside of my idols. Look, let me tell you what this guy has right, okay? Because I don't want us to jump to some conclusions here. First, that he was rich. He did that right. It's okay to be rich. In the Bible, when a person is kind of set off and they say he's rich, it's supposed to be a compliment because God's blessing him. Old Testament, New Testament, kind of the same values for the most part. It's not a bad thing. The other thing is that he's very industrious. Okay, I mean, you got to be careful, though, by the way, when we say this, because just because he's rich, you got to be careful as to whether or not, like, he has wealth or the wealth has him, right? That makes all the difference in the world. And then in his industry, right, he's a very hardworking man. It says he's a farmer. And I don't know much about farming, but I know enough to not be a farmer. Because I know farming is hard. And it's just terribly hard work. And I've been to this part of the world. And if there's a worse place to do farming, I can't think of it. So in the Palestinian sun, he is bearing down at sunrise. He's out there until dusk. He works and he's farming hard. There's no such thing. Listen, there's no such thing as a successful, lazy farmer. It can't happen. And so this guy's industrious. But listen, industrious to what end? You can be hard working and running fast in the wrong direction. When was this guy ever going to get enough? So I'm not sure he asked that question. And he's also fairly progressive because he saw what the problem was and he was thinking out to the future. And if he had bigger barns, there it goes. So in this story where Jesus is telling, he's not faulting him for being rich or industrious or progressive. What he's faulting him for is what? What about anything else in the world besides you? He never thought of anyone outside of his own little universe. And then one night, everything changed. He planned on every possible contingency except the one thing that was absolutely, positively certain to happen. Death rang his bell. Haddon Robinson, in a sermon on this passage, he kind of paints this picture that this rich farmer is working downstairs with the architect on his future barns, and they're looking over it with candlelight. His wife's come downstairs again. Come on, can you come to bed? This is ridiculous. No, I'll maybe be up later. Go on without me. And then he finally looks at the architect and says, you've got to get some sleep. I'll walk you out. Walks him out, comes back. He's staring at the plans, more, better, bigger. And then when he looks up, there's this giant man in front of him, and he says, hi, I'm Death, and I've come for you. And the farmer says, wait, what? Wait, I didn't know you were going to be coming today. You never told me. You never warned me. And Death says, oh, I warned you. I warned you 2 years ago when your partner died. I warned you 3 weeks ago when the neighbor suddenly was taken. Yesterday, remember how annoyed you were when traffic stopped as you stared at that hearse walking by? I warned you plenty. And I've come to count you out. 10, 9. 8. And the man interrupts. He says, wait a minute. I'll give you half of everything if you just let me live. Just half. I'll give you half of everything. Look at this year I've had. Give you half of it. Just let me live. And Death says, I don't need that. And you won't either. 5, 4, 3. And he says, wait. Okay, great. I'll give you everything. Just give me time. Give me one more day to make things right. Give me time. You have no time. 2, 1. And then Death waved his hand, and the man seized up and fell face down onto those blueprints. And the next morning, the wife comes down and sees him sleeping there, but he's not sleeping. And in those days, it was a fast turnaround for funerals. So the very next day, they're at the funeral, and guess what they talked about? They talked about how wealthy he was. They talked about how industrious and how what a hard worker he was. And how progressive and forward-thinking, how he was planning for the future. No one called him smart, and no one called him generous. And then after they buried him and put him in the ground and wrote those poems on his tombstone, later that evening there was a spirit, the angel of God, where he writes on the top of that tombstone for all of heaven to see God's evaluation of this man's entire life, and he writes the word fool. God sends the angel to write the word fool because he was a fool, because he planned out every possible solution to every problem except the one problem that he knew he would have, that he would die someday. And he never planned for that. He never took into consideration that he would stand before God and give an account for every choice he made. And that's why Jesus says, you know, this is how it will be for everyone who stores up things for themselves and is not rich towards God. Look, this man was not an atheist. You know, he was a religious person, as much as you and I are. But he wasn't thinking. He wasn't watching out. He wasn't being on guard for all kinds of greed. He was worshiping an idol of control and pleasure, and he was using money to serve that. His neck was like this, and he never thought that maybe all the world is not right. And he had plenty of warnings to put it right, but he didn't. He didn't heed that. And so Jesus tells this story because he wants us to know that this is how it will be for every single person. Every single person who stores up things for themselves. 9 times the first person possessive pronoun is used, you know? Mine. I will take my stuff. What about the homeless children? Oh, yeah, right. Next harvest, we'll give some of that. There will not be a next harvest. So Jesus, look at the words again. He says, watch out, be on your guard for all kinds of greed, because a man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions. Watch out. You're about to be in a traffic wreck of life. So listen, especially when you're young, if you're not careful, you'll look, when you're choosing a career for the rest of your life, you might choose something that makes money instead of just to be wealthy. If you're not careful with this type of greed when you're young, you'll choose a career that makes money instead of the career that God wants you to do, because he made you to do that. And you're choosing a lifestyle but not a life, do you see? That's what you're at risk at if you're not on your guard for this kind of greed. He says, watch out, you guys in your 30s and 40s, because those are those grinding years. Those are the ambitious years. And if you're not careful, if you're not watching out for this type of greed, you'll make these ethical decisions that are just a little tilted, just a little bit like that. But they'll get you ahead. And you'll say, I never crossed the line, because you never saw the line, because you can't see the line if you're looking at life with a crooked neck. And Jesus says, no. Let me be the person that whispers in your boss's ears and tells him about your good works. Trust in some of my involvement in your life. He says, watch out. He says, be on guard for all kinds of greed in your 40s and your 50s, because those are the panicking years. You can look at your children, you can start trying to manipulate them with the money or resources you have, or you can freak out about the expenses that they're going to incur on your life, or you can think about the future, about whether or not you have enough retirement, and you can just start turning in for control and miss wonderful opportunities to serve God and to be generous. That kind of greed in that style, in that phase of life, is especially dangerous. Jesus says, watch out. Be on your guard for all types of greed in your productive years of 55 and on, because wisdom is finally blooming and the fruit is just budding and falling. And if you're not very careful and you're not watching out for this type of greed, you'll say to yourself, when's it my turn? When do I get to be a taker? When can I just kind of spend on myself? And you'll have, again, you're looking at life like this, and God's saying, well, what about the homeless children? What about all the kingdom that I'm building, the eternal kingdom that I'm building around the world, and all you're thinking about is your kingdom on earth? Don't get lost in all of that. That's why Jesus is in this panic thing. He says, watch out. If you're not intrinsically and intuitively generous, you are greedy. If you have to be reminded of the needs of what's going on around the church and around the world, something's broken. I think your pictures are hanging crooked. I don't care what you think. That's the problem with greed. You don't even know you're drinking it. There's a funny little parable from the Italians that's helpful. It goes like this. There's an Italian man, and he's a big, fancy, wealthy man, and he has some servants, and he has one servant that he's especially annoyed with. He's just, and I don't know what happened that day, but he had an audience with this servant, the master, and he had him brought into his bedroom even, and he says, "Hey, okay, this is it. You are the dumbest, most stupid person I have ever met in my life. This is what I want you to do. In light of what you did today, I'm going to give you this cane. And I want you to carry this cane with you everywhere. Go all around. Just go on journeys. And here's what I want you. Here's your assignment. I want you to give this cane to the person you find that's stupider than you. Okay? Now just get out of my sight. Leave me alone. Take the cane." Now here's what's funny. Is the servant didn't understand that it was hyperbole, that he was exaggerating. It was just kind of trying to get him. So he takes the cane and goes on these journeys looking for someone more dumb than he is. He's looking for the stupider person. Well, he's out for years, and it turns out that he's called back to the master's quarters and literally into his bedroom again, but now the master is not well. And so there is this servant and the master at his bed, and he says, "You need to come closer. I can't talk loudly." And so he says, "Yes, master, what is it that you want?" And he says, I'm going on a very long journey." And so the servant said, "Well, okay. When are you coming back?" And the man said, "I'm not coming back. I'll never be back." Well, the servant said, "Well, then I'm sure you've prepared yourself for this long journey." And the master said, "I have not prepared myself at all." "Well, did you have time to prepare?" "Yeah, I've had my whole life, but I just wasn't listening. I had many opportunities, but I didn't set aside things for my next life." And so the slave said, "So you're going on a very long journey and you're never going to come back and you didn't prepare, but you could have?" That about summarizes it. And so the slave takes his cane and says, "Then you need to take this because you're the stupidest person that's ever existed." I hope there's no one in here that's that stupid. I hope being all in means that you understand the deeper values, that we are eternal things contained in a very temporal flesh, in a temporal world, and we send our investments ahead of us. That we live faithfully and courageously as though we will stand before God and give an account for what we spent all of our energy and all our talents and all of our wealth on. We want the right things written on our tombstones, don't we? Some kind of indelible mark that angels and heavenly beings can look down on our caskets and our tombstones and we'll have the right things written. Right? Watch out. Be on your guard for all kinds of greed. It's not about how much you have. It's about how much you give. Dear Heavenly Father, life is slipping away as we speak. Someone in this auditorium will be the next funeral for this church. And the young and the healthy are not spared. And Lord, I'd ask that you would give us a glimpse of our next life, where we are greeted by these alternatives. Either we have been foolish or we have done well. God, I'd ask that you would help us find these deeper idols, these other gods that are false before us, that enslave us. And I'd ask that you would help us see things from your point of view and turn our lives over to you for comfort and for power and for appreciation, for just control, that we would live a life that reflects what's true and right and real, and that we would choose to serve you and not the love of money. God, I'd ask that you would help us not just have values, but have choices, so that when that angel writes on our headstone, he writes, "Well done. Good life. Nice." Shake us up, God. Just rattle us. Get us out of this alternate world that we think is true. And let us enjoy you. And we want you to enjoy us. And all God's people said, amen.
For more information about Grace, visit our website at grace360.org.